Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Hear this from a college football fan. Most often, it's an excuse ahead of a beatdown. I think it's actually true in one SEC locale this season. Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. How are y'all? I'm here talking college football, so it's a pretty groovy existence for me. I appreciate everybody coming in and getting your college football combo here. Thank you. I had mentioned, I think it was on Monday. Can't even remember why. Not important. But I had brought up something that I just want to kind of flesh out a little bit. And there is a phrase, which, by the way, anything, I've said this before with a head coach, if you're at a booster meeting, I don't know if you're, you know, breakfast with the Tigers and you're Brian Kelly and you want to start spouting out, I don't care what you say. You're talking to boosters and fans. Wasn't it at a booster breakfast when Jimbo, Dan, didn't Jim, cover your ears. I really try not to use swear words on the air. What did Jimbo at a booster breakfast, somebody asked him about Saban leaving and he said, we'll beat his ass while he's still there?
It was either that or a chicken and green bean circuit, something like that. But it was one of those booster, let me fire up my base kind of deals.
Where it really doesn't matter what he says. It's not like he promised, we're going to the wishbone. What? No. He's out there. By the way, he went out and did it. Whatever. But I've always said, when you're talking to booster groups or fans or anything, say whatever you want to say. Lane Kiffin, and we're going to play Rocky Top all night in the swamp. I was like, I don't think that's going to happen. But that was my point back in, I guess, 2009. I was like, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, Lane, because of this line and that secondary and this receiver. I was like, I don't think it's going to happen. But that was the only conversation I really cared to have about it. What he said, I didn't care. He was talking to fans. He was talking to Tennessee fans. What's he supposed to say? I don't know, man. Probably not going to go down there and win. That's for me to say. What he said about South Carolina. Now, you know, what was it? A South Carolina degree will get you in line to pump gas? That was tough. But for the most part, say whatever you want. And I always put it in the context of, oh, well, that's just a fan. You're a fan. You're a fanatic. Say whatever you want. And I was telling a story about how during last season, I think it was the beginning of November maybe, I heard a phrase shouted at me. By the way, I was misidentified, but shouted at me by a Tennessee Vols fan who had had enough of the season to think, hey, wait a minute. This is kind of fun. And so week by week, Tennessee fans weren't winning every week, but they were having fun. And you know how long it had been since Tennessee fans had had fun sort of consistently without the black clouds gathering of the NCAA and Niedermeyer and McDonald's bags and Pruitt and all that? Jeremy Pruitt, who somehow thought you were supposed to wear the COVID mask to cover your ears, not your mouth. I never understood that look in Athens that day. But it had been a minute since Tennessee fans had any sort of sustained fun. And ahead of the Georgia game, I was broadcasting actually from a Hooters in Knoxville. And I had a Tennessee fan who had experienced enough of the season to that point to realize, hey, wait a minute, this is real, by the way. This is legit. Even at its best with Butch, didn't it always seem to be, hey, is anybody really looking? Because this doesn't seem sustainable. Last season, I'm disinterested that week, okay? Let me take that back. I'm interested. I'm unattached. I'm an unattached interested third party in Knoxville that weekend. I was like, oh, gimme, gimme. Because I love seeing a team that starts to kind of smell itself. And they know that they're about to get tested. How do you come out, you know? How do you punch? How do you do whatever? So I was all about it. I just was unattached to either team. So I go to a commercial break. And I'm heading over to a bathroom, or I had to go to the parking lot, something to get out of my car. And I have a Tennessee fan yell, quote, "Hey, Georgia guy." I'm looking around. I was like, oh, he's talking to me. So I don't argue. I just turn around. I was like, yes. "Hey, Georgia guy," quote, "you better get us this year." And I looked, and the point I was making the other day when I brought this story up is I just agree now. I don't argue. I don't even counter. I don't. "Hey, Georgia guy," if I'd have turned around and he just said, "I heard the SEC is going to let us play with 14 tomorrow," I would have said, "Yeah, I heard that too. Just keep it moving, man." But he told me, "You better get us this year." And I understood what he actually was saying. What that means is, I know that we're improved, and I think it's going to keep happening. This weekend is probably a little much for us, but we're going to keep getting better. And if that is all a fan is really saying, rock, good for you. My gosh, good for you. Do you know what a Missouri fan was not saying at the beginning of November? "Hey, man, 22, whoo, looks like it's going to be lights out." That wasn't happening. Florida fan? "Hey, man, 22, lights out." Wasn't really, beginning of November, wasn't really the message. Tennessee last year, beginning of November, with Georgia running out of the tunnel in Neyland the next day, a Tennessee fan accurately looked at their situation and said, "Hey, better get us this year." Now, I say accurately assess the situation in terms of accurately assess the situation in terms of what is the big picture for Tennessee versus what is likely to happen tomorrow, because I'm going to translate this, okay? You're likely to win tomorrow, but in advance of this beatdown, I feel pretty good about the overall don't think that losing tomorrow is going to douse my enthusiasm. That's basically all that's saying. "You better get us this year" is I'm pretty certain we're going to lose Saturday, but don't think that douses what I believe about the future. If Missouri was ahead of Georgia or Bama or whomever that they knew, yeah, we're going to lose by 4 touchdowns. You could be in Como at the most diehard Tigers bar that exist, and I don't think with Bama or Georgia coming out of the tunnel that you'd have a Mizzou fan go, "Hey, better beat us this year. You better get us." A Georgia fan would go, "Yeah, what about next year?" "Well, yeah, you'll probably get us next year too." That would probably be how that conversation went. I think it's true for Texas A&M. I think that statement, if there's a Texas A&M fan, even ahead, see, they have a pretty difficult schedule. They have the regulars that you know, LSU, Bama, et cetera. They've got Miami early, which matters. It's at home. That's not nothing. But if you hear that, for instance, from an A&M fan ahead of the Miami game, I don't dismiss it as, "Hey, we're probably going to lose to Miami, but I want y'all to know it doesn't bother me because brighter days ahead." Mm-mm. You hear that from an Aggies fan? First of all, they could beat Miami. But it's true in every sense. If you win Saturday, good for you. Because it may be the last time for a while. I believe if you hear that from an A&M fan, it's true. Really could be, now this is the bigger point, it could be a turning point in the West Division, which is tough news for Bama because Texas A&M, it really looks Like everything you think, and I mentioned this two seasons ago, I believe. Hey, that's an SEC roster now. That's an SEC-looking roster now. And because it hadn't been class after class after class at the elite top level, you were kind of set up for a vacuum season, which I think is 2022. I think, and I'm about to get to like just one example of it, of why I think this is sort of a vacuum. LSU had the vacuum season. I think it was maybe the year that Honey Badger got suspended, and that was on top of like 12 juniors declaring for the draft. And I was like, a vacuum season. Clemson had a vacuum season. Bama has had their version of a vacuum season where it all kind of coaches leave and whatever. I think Jimbo has a very – and it's not a unique opinion, by the way. I'm telling you, when you hear that this season, it may be true. So it may be tough news for Bama if this really takes permanent like what looks like it's happening in Athens. So while I say it's tough news for Bama because now you may have somebody literally shoulder to shoulder with you as a program – that's tough news for Bama. It's the worst kind of news for Ole Miss. And specifically why I bring up the Rebels. Because if this is true, when you hear it from the chest out Aggie fan, better get us this year. You know what Ole Miss did last year? They got Texas A&M. Felt kind of good. Didn't they? They beat them by 10 maybe. Double digits. Better get us this year. Uh-huh. Because going forward, Ole Miss, and I'll talk about them specifically, going forward, I know what you thought was happening on your campus, Rebel fan. You had a goal, the real actual goal in Oxford, finishing second in the division some seasons. That was it. And that's high cotton, let me tell you. That is salad days, end of the rainbow stuff in Oxford for Ole Miss football. Quote, what is your real attainable goal for the football program on an ongoing basis? If the answer is finish second in the division some seasons and compete virtually every season. The real goal in Oxford, folks, is not to win the West. It's not. Because that's not a program that's going to, on a particular season it can be. But as a program, like what's the program goal at Alabama? Win the West? No, it's not even to win the conference. The goal at Alabama is to be in the playoffs and then win the national championship. At Oxford, if we're being realistic, not in a season, as a program, what's the goal? Goal is to finish second in the division some seasons and compete most other seasons. That goal is now far less attainable, folks. Here's your short version. If you're a Rebel fan, you want the 2021 season to be the jumping on point if you really are going to be a factor as a program, not just in one season. And you might have just gotten passed by two programs in that pursuit. Brian Kelly, LSU, enough said. And that one example I said I would give you with the Aggies, let's get out the magnifying glass and drill down the Aggies' defensive line is the Aggies' team in a lot of ways. There are five former five-star recruits duking it out for snaps, for playing time, to be the Mac. David, do you know what that means? Somebody wants to be the Mac? That hurts my heart. Five former five-star, I mean, he wants to be the baddest of all the bad guys. Five former five-star recruits. What did I say there? I said duking it out for snaps, trying to get some playing time. You know what I didn't say? I didn't talk about how many of them will start because I don't know who will start, and neither does DJ Durkin. See, that's what this season is for the Aggies. We've got five Godzillas in this position group, but I don't know any of them that will actually start or play a lot or dominate because they haven't proven anything. They haven't grown into who they are yet. That defensive line group that I just described, folks, that is the team in so many different areas. And man, is there blue sky. With Haynes King at quarterback, that tells me that Jimbo, here's part of your measuring stick. If Haynes King is named the starter, I think Jimbo feels real good about some other spots on the team. If Max Johnson is a starter, he may be trying to help out some other spots with a veteran quarterback who at least played some. So there's, I think, is going to be a little bit, small slice of a commentary on the rest of the team by that quarterback battle. But overall, if you hear an Aggies fan say, yeah, you better get us this year, it is not just because they expect to lose on Saturday.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
It's Wednesday on the Chuck Oliver Show. A whole lot like a Monday and a Tuesday or any other time later in the week. We talk college football. Our next guest will certainly help us check that box. Good friend of mine, good friend of the program, and he's got his own deal right now. He's an entrepreneur, among other things. I'm just going to bring him on from Off the Hook Sports. No, he is Off the Hook Sports. Dave Hooker, how you doing, brother?
I'm fantastic. Chuck, I hope you're doing well.
I really am. Tell everybody about your new venture. We were talking during media days, I know, but give everybody a flyover.
Well, I'm excited. It's offthehooksports.com. You know, basically took what I've been doing in journalism and hosting and added it to the digital realm. We've seen other people do that in Nashville and Birmingham, so that's what I decided to do. So, sell games with players and interview current players, which I never thought I'd be able to do. And we've got all kinds of analysts from that cover Tennessee, as I do now, on a regular basis again. And so we're excited to get rolling. We got going June the 6th, and so far the response has been tremendous.
Well, let's talk about I was relaying kind of a funny story that I related to Texas A&M for this season. But last year when I was in Knoxville ahead of the Georgia game, I had a Tennessee fan kind of yell at me. Said, "Hey, Georgia guy." And I was like, "All right, fine, I'll be Georgia guy now." So I turned around. I was like, "Yeah, what's up?" He said, "You better get us this year." Talk about that idea, because I know what that is most times. You say that ahead of an expected beatdown to say, "Yeah, but there are better days ahead." Tell me about those better days, because in the SEC, they really do need to include wins. And I think 7 wins, if Tennessee had 7 wins this year with some of the things happening in the East where it's getting more difficult, I think overall 7 wins is kind of a target for him again this year.
You know, I really have got them, and I think they're 7.5 out of 8. I've got them more along the lines of 8 or maybe even 9, winning 3 or 4 of the swing games I have on, at least in my perspective. Yeah, I think Tennessee can be really good and beat the teams they should. Now, as far as competing with Georgia, let's be real clear. Georgia now for a handful of years has recruited at a level that Tennessee did in the 90s, okay? So we're not comparing rosters here. There is no comparison, whether you're talking the front line or you're talking depth. So Georgia's going to have that over them for a while. But I like what Tennessee has in place to pull an upset. I don't think Georgia's the upset that they pull, and their favorite against Florida. Maybe they will be an underdog against LSU down there. I think they pull an upset. I don't think it's Georgia yet, though. I still think they have too many of those big war daddies that Tennessee's trying to get.
I want to talk about the really good, really quick, the offense. Set a school record for points scored last year. And you can't just explain that away. Oh, well, look at the system. No, they executed that system, and they got the quarterback coming back and some of the skill pieces as well. How much better can Hendon Hooker be?
See, significantly. Remember, they didn't think he was good enough to start the season last year. They started Joe Milton, who has, can throw 100 yards, has a bazooka, looks like Adonis, you know, all that, but ultimately didn't make a decision, wasn't very accurate, so that's not like a quarterback. So they put in Hendon Hooker. So you got to realize that a lot of the times, you know, Tennessee wasn't good in pass protection. A lot of times it was Hendon's fault because he didn't get a lot of those first team snaps in preseason.
Yeah.
And until Joe Milton went out, you know, Hendon Hooker was considered the backup. So, you know, I think there were times where there was some ball padding. I think there was some hesitation in the pocket. How many of those sacks were, you know, his fault last year? You know, I don't know, but I think he'll be more efficient this year, considerably more efficient. And Tennessee returns 4 or 5 up front on the offensive line. There's some movement there, but there is experience. So I think Tennessee takes another step. Waiting on Brew McCoy, the transfer from Southern Cal. But I would argue this, if they get Brew McCoy eligible and you combine him with Cedric Tillman, I'd put those two receivers up against any two in the nation. I know everybody runs multiple receiver sets, but as far as your 1-2, that's pretty good.
It really is. Wrapping up, Dave Hooker from Off the Hook Sports. Let's talk defense, because I think so often we allow what we talk about a college kid to sort of be colored by what happens as an NFL player. You remember Herman Lathers?
Yeah.
Just a tough, I mean, just a headbuster, man. Just a really good SEC linebacker. I don't know how he projected to the NFL. I didn't care. I think Jeremy Banks can be as productive as any linebacker in the SEC, except maybe Henry Toto, just literally piling up tackles. We got about a minute left. Just talk the upside for, not as an NFL player, but what he is still on Saturdays.
I think he could be good in the NFL, too. He caught it. He actually had an interception off a swing pass in Tennessee's first scrimmage, which was on Tuesday. I think he can be very good. I think he's explosive. I think he is just starting to find his way a little bit because of the coaching change. I think of all the players on Tennessee's football team, him and probably Cedric Tillman have just the best upside on the roster, other than maybe some freshmen, I don't know. But, yeah, I think he is. I think he's going to be really good, a playmaker in the SEC this fall, no question.
And the reason I say, the NFL, what he is a Sunday guy, he was a running back, and so he's still kind of figuring out what he's doing running around out there. So he is still kind of a project and learning the thing, but, man, he was productive last year. Dave, appreciate your help coming on today, man. Good luck on the new venture, man. Thank you.
I appreciate it, buddy. Have a great day.
Dave Hooker, again, just appreciate him coming on. You can get him on Twitter, The Dave Hooker. Again, Off the Hook Sports with Dave Hooker, his new venture there. But Jeremy Banks, and it, you can still get drafted as a, I don't want to say as a redshirt, but the NFL, they have a history of doing that, a developmental player that is going to need a little bit of time. And you can stash him on the practice squad unless somebody wants to put him on the active roster and leave him there for the rest of the season. But Banks is a guy that I don't want to talk about how he projects to the NFL, because I just know how dang productive he was last year on a defense where there were tackles to be made, but give him credit, he made them.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
The value of a college football head coach, in particular, head coach, having NFL experience has changed so dramatically. Do you know what the entire value used to be? On the recruiting trip, son, I've coached in the NFL. I know what it looks like, and I can turn you into that. That was it. That was like 97% of it. Do you know what that 3% was? Oh, and I coached your daddy. But if I was a coach in the NFL and now I'm on a college staff, especially as the head coach, son, I know what it looks like on Sundays and I can get you there. This other head coach, what's he know about it? He's never even been in the league. He's a college lifer. That was the entire value of it. Do you know what the value is now? You know how to run mini camps and free agent tryouts. Lane Kiffin said it. He wasn't especially successful as a head coach in the NFL. He was there about a season and a half, I remember. Again, I think maybe the signature moment is he sent Sebastian Janikowski out there to attempt like an 80-yard field goal. So he wasn't particularly successful. But growing up with Dad, who like kind of invented a defense, he had that NFL. He was around it. He knows. And, folks, I never thought I would say this, but organizationally, having NFL experience, that's the value now. That's the value. Boy, Lane Kiffin's got it. He had, what was it, like 2018 transfers? That's mini camp. That's an organized team activity in the NFL. Want to welcome on now. Guy does a tremendous job. I want to say covering Ole Miss. I'm going to say keeping track of, like, I don't know, whatever it was, a couple dozen transfers from the Clarion Ledger. It is Nick Suss. Nick, how are you today?
Good, and if you want the number off the top, I believe it's 44% of the roster is either transfers, freshmen, or new walk-ons.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. OTAs.
That's exactly what it is, and it's from all over. Oh, by the way, this is just curiosity. I see Malik Heath dissing the Cowbells. If you know, there's a transfer receiver from Mississippi State at Ole Miss. Did he take a shot at the Cowbells?
Yeah, he said they're too loud, which is both taking a shot at it and a compliment. I mean, if you're going to get bent out of whack, he's like, man, your advantage is good. I don't know if that's necessarily the best diss, but yeah, no, he took a little bit of a shot. And I mean, what he said more directly was he felt that the scheme and the air raid system didn't really take advantage of his downfield abilities, and he wanted to go somewhere where he could run more vertical routes, and he felt that Ole Miss's system kind of gave him a little bit more care and attention than what he was getting in Leach's system. And I mean, that's always fair for a kid, but it is weird. I could be wrong. I haven't looked at every single roster ever, but I'm fairly certain first person to transfer from State to Ole Miss since 78, 79. It's been a while since this has happened, so it's going to be exciting.
Well, there is shakeout going on probably every position group on the roster, but let's start at quarterback, because what I thought was just sort of a story to keep both kids interested and working hard through the summer. No, Altemeyer, he really can be the quarterback. I thought that was just, you know, Lane Kiffin throwing that out there to make Jackson Dart, you know, push him a little bit. That's not the case. Luke Altemeyer is a real thing, and apparently they both are a real thing. Maybe there's a third kid who's a real thing, but it's not for a good reason because they both look so good. What I hear is that neither kid's putting a hammer lock on this job.
Yeah, I keep joking that the biggest winner of this quarterback competition is running backs coach Markwell Blackwell. They got a really good offensive line. They got a really good running game. I'm pretty confident in this offense working because Lane Kiffin's offenses tend to work. But if you're asking who's going to be behind center, I don't think anyone has separated quite yet. I think that it's the same thing I told you in the spring and the same thing probably everybody's told you, which is Altmaier plays a safer brand of football. He's not going to make mistakes, but he's probably not going to have that elite next-level arm talent that can win you games just on the virtue of his talents. And then Dart, he's a little bit more of a risk taker. He seems more assured in the system in the fall than he did in the spring, but it's still, he'll make these throws that make you think, wow, that's a 5-star right there. And then he'll make some decisions that make you think, oh gosh, that's a 19-year-old sophomore. And both are true. I mean, that's the duality of youth right there on a college football program. I watched Corral when he was 19 and a sophomore like these guys, and he looked a lot like they did. I mean, very few quarterbacks are finished, polished products like Bryce Young was last year at 19, but I don't know. It's going to be an interesting 2-3 weeks before the Troy game, while they have to try and make this decision. And I'm actually excited for the scrimmage on Saturday to kind of see how they divvy up the reps and how they let these guys kind of handle their offenses.
Okay, I want to quiz you because this is just to build some background for this question. So I'm not looking for a deep dive here. Like, were you there for all of John Rhys Plumlee's time on scholarship?
I was, yeah.
Okay, all right. So do you think that this is fair, or I'm beating up a college kid? I think it's being fair. The John Rhys Plumlee I saw throw the football, that wasn't an SEC-level quarterback. That just was a guy who just could not do that. And I don't think that you really could have a functioning passing game with him as the full-time quarterback. Do you think that's fair, or that's too brutal?
I think that's fair. I think it was a combination of that with Rich Rodriguez's offense not being super pass-friendly to begin with, but I think it is probably a combination, yeah.
Okay, so that sets up this question then, because with Altemeier and Jackson, it's funny the way you put it is like Altemeier's the safer choice. Is Lane more about the quarterback floor or the quarterback ceiling? Because I am of the opinion I can't have turnovers. I don't care what you can't do. As long as you don't turn it over, I can probably figure out a way to play you. But that's me. Do you think Lane is more about the floor or the ceiling?
Generally, my assumption is the ceiling. And I think that the best illustration of that is look at the way he handles fourth downs, where you can look at going for it on fourth down as, are you trying to maximize your ability to win or minimize your ability to lose? It's analytics versus risk mitigation. And he always takes the analytics because building towards win probability is better than avoiding the drop-off of loss probability, which sounds like a weird mathematical way of saying it, but it comes down to he's more willing to try to win than he is to avoid trying to lose. That said, his number one criteria every time he talks about quarterback play is limiting turnovers. So yeah, that's a big risk mitigation move. I would say the easiest way to think about this is we've kind of mythologized Matt Corral's 2020 game against Arkansas, where he threw the 5 interceptions or 6 interceptions and never got pulled, never got benched. They let him play. They let him go through it, and they ended up having a pretty good year. He led the FBS in yards per game that year. That sort of confidence doesn't mean, oh, Kiffin's fine with turnovers. He's here for the big play. What it means is he trusts his ability and his coaching staff's ability and his scheme's ability to nurture quarterbacks. So if you have that gambler, he's going to try and right that ship. And that's kind of why the question is, would it be easier to teach Jackson Dart how to be more like Luke Altmaier, or easier to teach Luke Altmaier how to be more like Jackson Dart? I think Kiffin's track record shows that he is a little bit more willing to take an unmolded piece of clay and mold it than he is to kind of let a stallion loose. So I don't know. I really think that I've probably said it on your show 2-3 times. The instinct feels like Dart is the guy, but my eye test keeps telling me they're virtually identical and I'm not the coach, so I'm not going to trust my instincts. I'm going to trust my eyes and say they have been neck and neck all spring. They've been neck and neck all fall. No decision has been made.
Can't hear enough positive about the tight end transfer from USC. Athletic, and this was just an eyedropper of a spring practice, but kid, 4-star recruit, played just a little bit last year, injury transfer, blah, blah, blah. Trigg may be a star this year.
He could be. I can't remember the last time the SEC was this loaded at tight end. There is a lot of talent across the board, which kind of makes you lose track of someone like Michael Trigg. But he is a special athlete. I think it was Jonathan Mingo, the starting receiver, compared him to Kyle Pitts the other day, and Lane Kiffin said, "Whoa, let's not go there quite yet." Kyle Pitts is an unreal talent, but that's the kind of physical tools that you see from someone like Trigg, who, if he devoted his full life to basketball, probably could be playing Power 5 basketball somewhere right now. And he tried to play basketball at USC, and obviously the transfer portal limited that, but that's kind of the talent he is. I'm excited to see what kind of a factor he'll be in the offense, because I've joked for almost a decade now, the most popular players on the team are always your backup quarterback and your tight end. Those are the two people that fans want to know the most about. So if they can get him the ball and kind of right the wrongs from the way that Ole Miss used and did not use Dawson Knox, I think that the fans would be very, very into having a tight end forward offense.
Okay, again, this is just a sort of a, you know, business question here. Are they starting the, is it Eli Acker? Is he going to start at guard? Because otherwise it's old men on the line. Is that how it's going to turn out, you think?
Yeah, the offensive line is almost assuredly set.
Okay.
It'll be
okay.
Jeremy Jones at left tackle, Nick Broeker at left guard, Caleb Warren at center, Eli Acker at right guard, and Mason Brooks at right tackle.
Okay, so everybody old men, three of them starters, and then so if it's just the kid at the guard and he's surrounded on, you know, guard, center and tackle, it's a little different there, and so that's fine. This looks like an offensive line to me that is big and strong and has played together and can mash. And I think they have some backs that can mash as well. Probably not Bentley as much, certainly, but there's a different role for him. I think this can be a really different looking team than what people really believe about Lane Kiffin, that it's always shotgun four wide.
And even if it is shotgun four wide, they still run the ball 60% of the time. I think that's the thing that's lost about Kiffin
so many
times. It's like, look, they in 2020 led the SEC in rushing, and last year I believe they were second in the SEC in rushing to Arkansas. This is a team that runs the ball a ton. When you're running tempo, when you're running 75 to 85 plays a game, you're not throwing 75 to 80 times a game. You can look at Matt Corral's stats that showed he was throwing 25 to 30 times a game. That means you're running the ball upwards of 40 times a game. And that's why you have not just Zach Evans, not just Ulysses Bentley, but a freshman Quinshon Judkins, who people are raving about here. And he looks just as physical as Snoop Connor did. And I mean, that's a huge piece of praise to heap on a freshman. But
yeah, you
got him, you got Kentrell Bullock, you got five offensive linemen with starting experience. Acker, you talk about him being the young guy. He still started, I think, four games at the end of last season. You got a lot of confidence in the ability to run the ball and the ability to scheme the run on this team. It's just, again, always going to come down to Lane Kiffin doesn't have a set scheme. He schemes around his players and their talents. He usually finds one or two best players and finds a way to make the offense funnel through those guys. So if those one or two best players are Zach Evans and Ulysses Bentley or Michael Trigg or that sort of stuff, maybe it's not as quarterback heavy of an offense as it was last year, because you don't have a Matt Corral, or at least you don't have a fully fleshed out version of a 22-year-old Matt Corral. You got somebody who's more like him when he was 19. I think that's kind of the stuff that people aren't thinking about of, oh, well, we don't know who the quarterback's going to be.
Nope.
You don't know what anything's going to be. Lane Kiffin's offense is never the same year one to year two to year three. So just sit back and wait and see what it reveals itself.
Well, I've talked maybe with you, but I've talked before. I was like, you go back and look, five different places, five kind of different offenses. It's like, you know, he's the guy who can walk into the kitchen, open the cabinets, go, all right, what do we got? And you can just make up dinner, I think. Flip it over, go as far back as we can, safety. I'm just going to give you a profile of a kid, because I love me some A.J. Finley, but just to profile what he is by description, big physical truck of a safety, old man that has started and played a lot of football. I just like that description. I really, really like A.J. Finley. Do I like him too much?
No, because the one person you'll ever talk to who has a higher opinion of A.J. Finley than you is me. I have been beating the drum of that's a 12-year pro since his freshman year. Just the way he handles himself, the way he plays. I'm not saying he's Ed Reed. I'm not saying he's Troy Polamalu. I'm saying that's a guy who handles his business well, and he does everything right. I mean, you talk about the truck, the ability to play in the box. I think he's also led the team in interceptions the last 2 years.
He's a safety that gets around the football. That is so rare.
He is a remarkable playmaker, and this year he's going to be surrounded by the deepest Ole Miss secondary I've seen since, obviously, the Hugh Freeze era. And, I mean, you look at some of the people they've surrounded him with. Otis Reese had a down year last year, but that's still a fifth-year senior with a really, really high recruiting pedigree. Aishim Young, coming in from Iowa State, was the Big 12 Freshman of the Year 2 years ago. And Ladarius Tennyson from Auburn is a Mack truck of a safety who pretty much is going to play linebacker for this team. The cornerback room, you return Miles Battle, you return DeAndre Prince, and you get Tyshawn Johnson as well. And then you get a lot of second-year players who look so much better, so much more confident this year. Markevious Brown, Trey Washington, MJ Daniels, Kendrick Breedlove. A lot of I didn't mention DeSean Jerkins, another transfer from Vanderbilt. They have a lot of bodies in the defensive backfield. And I think Finley is the key piece of it. I think him and Cedric Johnson are at defensive end are the two biggest pieces of defense. But I have been beating the why aren't people talking about AJ Finley drum all summer, and I'm not sitting here saying, oh, he's Antonio Johnson, he's Jalen Catalan. There are a lot of really good safeties in the league this year, Jordan Battles, but I believe he should be in the conversation with those guys at the very least.
Yeah, he's a stud. At Nick Suss, you decided to go with the basic on Twitter. I respect it. Nick Suss, I appreciate your time, man.
Yep, always happy to help, buddy.
All right, get him at the Clarion Ledger as well as on Twitter, at Nick Suss. We break, wrap up hour one next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Working with a head coach that philosophically you are aligned with of what you want or how you need to practice, the type of players you're looking for in recruiting, how you want to play middle field coverage, how you want to play split safety coverage, how you want to play pattern match. Not to say that we agree on everything, because we don't, but that's healthy.
That's Will Muschamp. Do I need to say that? I think I do. I do, yeah. When he was head coach, I'm a big fan of his. I think he's a really, really, really good coach. I don't know that he should be running a program only because I look at the win-loss records. That's the only thing. It's nothing about his personality, character, and none of that. I'm a big, big, big fan of Will Muschamp as a coach. I'll put it this way. I don't know why it hasn't worked out better with him running one program where, hey, it was kind of there. It's Florida. South Carolina, you can do better than he did. Shane Beamer did. Now, I don't know that they should have last year, but they did. So, whatever. But I'm a big fan of Will Muschamp, and he's talking about, hey, when you're an assistant or a coordinator, position coach, whatever it is, and you're an analyst, and you're on the same page, it aligns so closely with your head coach. Well, yeah, that's giant, man. He and Kirby, hand in a glove, pages in a letter. Boy, are they on the same page. Promise you. But there's a bigger point there. David, re-rack that, please. Industry term. Means I'm going to ask David to play that again. I want y'all to listen to something. Then you can go YouTube your computer and find it yourself if you want to, because he has a habit here, and I'm going to tell you, it's a habit, and it has to be on purpose. Go ahead, play that again.
Working with a head coach that philosophically you are aligned with of what you want or how you need to practice, the type of players you're looking for in recruiting, how you want to play middle field coverage, how you want to play split safety coverage, how you want to play pattern match.
All right, stop.
Not to say that
we... We say all the time, oh, he just reads from the script. He's just a coach. Give me another answer. Will Muschamp has a little bit of a pattern of he goes, hey, do you understand what I'm talking about? They lost at home in consecutive Saturdays when he was coach at Florida. They lost on consecutive Saturdays to Vanderbilt and Georgia Southern. And I believe it was after the Georgia Southern game, I was watching the press conference, and he starts like quizzing one of the reporters who asked a question about not being able to stop the run. And he asked him, do you know what inline option? He just starts quizzing him about the option. And I knew it was to back the reporter. Oh, put him in his place. I balance that with, I appreciate a little knowledge because it gives you something to go Google. All right, he said this. What does that mean? That's fantastic. Go have fun with it. But that's I get the feeling that's not always what he's doing. And there are times where he goes the, hey, do you even understand what I'm saying? Now, here's the truth. I'll go ahead and answer that. No. No, we don't. I've said, media can't go to practice. I was like, silly. Let the media go to practice. As long as it's not about who's healthy and out there and who's not. Folks, let the media go to practice. You know the truth? Most of us wouldn't understand most of what we see. So, and that, when he goes to that level, that's a little bit of a habit, and he doesn't need to have one. Dan, how are you today?
Oh, man, you know what? As we move along on this Wednesday, we get a little bit of news earlier on in the day that the headline, just go ahead and read it right here, Florida and Georgia will reportedly be allowed to host recruits at annual game in Jacksonville. Now, this is according to good buddy Palmer Toms of On Three's site for the Dogs, Dogs HQ, and it is a little bit of a catch in there, though, Chuck, where sources do tell Dogs HQ, reading this from the story, that Georgia and Florida will both be allowed to host recruits for the neutral site contest. However, they will still not be able to have any contact between coaches and recruits due to the off-campus nature of the game. Both schools, not just the designated home team like Oklahoma and Texas do for their annual matchup in Dallas, now will be able to provide tickets for prospects and their family. Okay. I mean, I guess that's something. I think if nothing else, it doesn't underscore what Kirby Smart has talked about. Now, I get it. It's kind of like, you know, Nick Saban last week with the whole rebuild conversation that he had and people saying, that's ridiculous, Nick. Don't say that. You weren't in a rebuild. You're perfectly fine no matter the season that you have right now while you're at Alabama. But for Kirby, it's kind of one of those things that this year, take this for an example, where it is – he's already got a neutral site game in Atlanta taking on Oregon in the very first week of the season. Now, you're not going to have, like I said, a lot of people crying for Kirby in terms of, yeah, I feel so bad. You know, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe this year you finished third as opposed to first overall in terms of the overall recruiting battle. They're still going to recruit at an elite level. I think if nothing else, it's going to be him now coming back to the table and saying, okay, cool. If you're going to do this, then open this thing up and allow it to be where if indeed you are signed into an annual game like this, where it's a situation for Georgia and Florida and for Texas and Oklahoma of saying, look, this is a special circumstance. Go ahead and let us host and have these guys here.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.